Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Caroline, you should tell them about the newest thing that Bloody Happy Hour is doing.
A Patreon.
It's a Patreon. What is that?
That means you're basically like a VIP member, and there's two different levels that you can, you know, subscribe to, and you get some perks. You maybe get like merch a little earlier. You get
exclusive merch.
You could get first dibs on signing up for a live show. You get episodes with no commercials.
You get our video because our video is no longer available on YouTube. It is only on Patreon. And the most important to me is you get videos of our live shows. So if you are far away and you couldn't make our last live show, it will be on the website. We're going to record this future live show. It's going to be on Patreon, but also bonus episodes each month. You guys tell us all the time you want more episodes. This is a way for you to get more episodes. So you're going to get our basic Tuesday, Thursdays that we always put out, right? But if you're on a Patreon, you're VIP, you're going to get more.
I can't wait to talk about in detail some more stories because I always have a lot of details I want to go to. I can law-splain. I might read a book.
They just unsubscribed. This is also going to be the exclusive place that Dirty Chat is going to go to. So if that is breaking some of your hearts, just go ahead and subscribe now. In order to hear the full content, it's going to be Patreon. Where do they go again?
Patreon.com/bloodyhappyhour.
Don't forget to
stay aware,
stay alive,
and always be DTF.
Hey y'all, I'm April.
And I'm Caroline.
And this is your Bloody Happy Hour. Caroline, are you ready for this?
This is your newest guilty pleasure.
It's the bloodiest part of your week.
Did we say something about it also being happy hour?
Sure did.
Because we're about to be sipping on some murder. Bloody happy hour.
Hey y'all, this is April.
And this is Caroline.
And you know, it's bloody happy hour time once again.
Oh, look at that. It's a gloomy day here in Waco, but you know.
You know, it was beautiful like all weekend, and then now it's like windy and.
It's about to be beautiful again though, so.
Yeah, I'll just hold my breath.
Okay, you should, because apparently there's a lot of smoke up in here with the fires that are going on in the panhandle.
Poor things.
I'm going to try not to talk too much because I've been talking a lot. Random things. Okay. Where are we going? We're going to California.
Cali.
We're going to California, and there is a little, we always have trigger warnings, but there's one part in here that's going to get a little descriptive, but I'll warn you before.
I get excited.
I know.
I love the descriptions.
So we're going to kind of near San Diego. So on February 1st.
Oh, the other day.
2002.
Okay.
Once again, all these things always happen in February. Danielle Van Dam was at home with her two brothers and her dad, Damon Van Dam. And he was watching the kids, and while his wife, Brenda, went out to a bar in a steakhouse with some of her friends. But before she left the house, the friends had come over and smoked a little weed. Okay. In the garage.
How old are they? They're the parents.
Yeah.
They're the parents.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's California. So
that's Brenda, normal. Yeah, Brenda and friends come over. They're smoking weed in the garage. One of the friends like opens the like side door to the garage to kind of air out the smoke. And like, no big deal. So she opened the door, whatever, and then they leave. And they go to have drinks and dinner and all this stuff. So it was around 10:30 p.m. that Damon, the daddy, put Danielle to bed. She goes to sleep pretty quickly. And then he goes to bed himself.
Okay.
Normal stuff. And then he was woken up in the early morning hours when Brenda gets home because Brenda a little...
She partied
been drinking,
a little bit.
You know, so no big deal. So it's around 2 a.m. Brenda comes home. And while she's coming in the house, she noticed that somebody had left that side door. She noticed that side door was open. And I don't know if it must have been like just swung open, or it could have been a sliding door. One of the doors is a sliding door, but this one was left open. She noticed, and she noticed that one of the lights on their alarm system was flashing, like it had been set off and it was flashing, but. She didn't think much of it because her husband's been home and like, what, why would you, I don't know. She just was like, oh, he's been home. So he's been here the whole time. It's not a big deal. So Brenda and her four of her girlfriends that she was out with, they come back with her. Mm-hmm. So she's gotten home and her friends are there with her. And they come into the house and Damon comes down and they hang out and they're like hanging out for like an hour or so before they go to bed. I'm sure they're smoking or something. Okay. So the friends hang out for a little bit. They leave. Everybody goes to sleep, or Brenda and Damon go to sleep. But then around 3:30 a.m., Damon wakes up and he notices that the security monitor in their bedroom was flashing red. Okay. So this is the same stuff that Brenda had seen earlier in the night, right?
Yeah.
So he starts like investigating. He's like, what might have set this alarm off? And then he figures out that the door to the backyard is wide open.
Okay.
So this is a different door. He closes the door. He goes back to sleep. He's not thinking anything of it. I don't know if it's because it's 3:30. He's kind of groggy. Maybe it's just really tired. Like, he doesn't think anything of it. And also, I don't know if they didn't talk about these flashing lights. Like, did they not discuss this?
Why is it only a flashing light, and why is there no siren attached to it?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, all of it's real sus to me. Like, it's real weird. It's just, I think they probably were just drunk and high. I don't know. But they both brushed it off.
And you walked in, and the door was wide open. You didn't go upstairs and check your daughter, because I know where it's going. I feel like I know where it's going.
You do.
Got high again.
The next morning, Damon and Brenda went to check on the kids. Two boys slept through the night. They have two boys and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So two boys and then Danielle. But they go to Danielle's room and her bed is empty and she's not there. There's no sign of her. She's not in the house. She's not in the backyard. Around 9:39 a.m. specifically, the Van Dams call 911 and they report Danielle missing, their 7-year-old daughter. Seven.
The captor was in the house the whole time they were partying?
No.
Okay, it's the daddy then.
Nope. The community and the neighborhood of Saber Springs, which is Saber Springs, San Diego. I guess it's like a little subdivision, I guess.
Yeah.
So they get together and they're trying to, like, they're searching, there's volunteers, they're combing the areas, they're looking along the highways. Like, this is, nothing's happens. Like, it's a well-to-do area. It's not normal for this to happen in that area. Never is, okay?
Yeah, it's not always is.
And so law enforcement's out there, friends, neighbors, everything. So that morning, all the police are starting to go door to door. They are going to every single neighborhood or every single house in the neighborhood to question or talk to or just see if anybody has any information. All the neighbors were home except for one neighbor, 49-year-old David Westerfield. He was self-employed as an engineer. He held several patents for medical devices. He lived in a nice 2-story house just two houses down from the Van Dams. He kept an immaculate house. His yard was perfectly trimmed, and everything was clean and tidy.
Never married, no kids.
He has kids. Okay. They're just two grown. Wait, they're two. Okay, he has two kids. but they're grown and they're like college age. So he's living alone and he's divorced. But he seems normal. Like, he lives in a nice house. He keeps a clean house. He keeps a good yard. Like,
Yeah, you want him as a neighbor?
Yeah. He has no criminal record. He was, like I said, a divorced father of two college students. But he also owns a luxury motorhome. And he seems to have money because he has, like, multiple cars. He has a motorhome. He likes to go and take his motorhome out to the desert, to the beach, or whatever, and... Like, they called him Desert David. I don't know. That's not a good name. So he likes to, yeah, he takes his motorhome and goes on on overnight trips, getaway trips, all kinds of stuff. So he was not a stranger to the Van Dams. And in fact, only, I think, like a few days before or a week before or something, Brenda had taken Danielle. So Brenda, the mom, took Danielle, the daughter, over to David's house because she was selling Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, man, you just served her up on a platter.
So they go over to the house, and after, like, he answers the door, he buys cookies, but then Brenda was like, hey, do you mind if we come inside and look? Because she knew that he had just remodeled his kitchen, and so she wanted to see the kitchen. So, like, she literally is just like, can I look at your new kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, we'll come in. So they come in, they look at the kitchen, like, things are fine.
I'd do that, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, she clearly had no, like, suspicions or, like, nothing about this guy. So investigators continue to question the neighbors. But when they go to David's house, they discover he's not home and neither is his motorhome. So it's only a few minutes after Danielle was reported missing that he was already gone. Okay, so he'd been there the night before, and we know he'd been there the night before because Brenda and him were actually at the same place that night. Yes. So what happened was David had packed up his motorhome. He'd driven to Silver Strand State Beach. Silver Strand State Beach, where he paid to stay for two nights. And the following day, he decided that it was too cold to stay at the beach, so he took the motorhome to the desert instead. And then on Monday morning, which was a couple nights after that, he drove back home. So he is out at the bar or the restaurant, but he gets home in time to pack up all his stuff and leave within, like, just a few hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was also seen at this dry cleaners that he frequented. So they're trying to put the pieces together, and they're like, well, where did he go, and where has he been when he left in his motorhome? Like, what did he do? So he showed up at this dry cleaners randomly. He was barefoot. He seemed to be exhausted.
The next day?
Yes, next day. He dropped off a small load of laundry, two pillowcases, two bed comforters, and a jacket. Immediately after he arrived home, he began to clean his motorhome. So police are like, okay, we are putting him on around-the-clock surveillance. So this is just a few days that have passed. Like, because he...
Impulse.
Went there. Yes, yes. And so they put him on around-the-clock surveillance, and the following day they impounded his motorhome and another vehicle for forensic testing. So,
but he's OCD, he's probably cleaned all the evidence.
Yes. But while speaking to the police, David was like, I have no idea where Danielle has gone. Like, he's like, I actually saw Brenda out the night before because at the bar,
watching her.
Yes. And it was, like, Brenda said she didn't really know him. She knew of him, and she'd been into his house. She knew who he was, but they weren't, like, hangout buddy friends. Apparently, he had a crush on one of her friends, so that's kind of why he was hanging, allegedly, while he was, like, hanging around them that night at the bar, whatever. So, one of the other aspects of David's original interview with police that was interesting to investigators was that he had provided an incredibly detailed summary of his nights spent away in his motorhome, and all of the details were backed up by eyewitnesses, receipts, phone records, and all the things. However, despite all of these details, there was one thing that David forgot to mention, and it was the fact that he had stopped by the dry cleaners on his way home.
Okay.
So on February 22nd, when did this all start?
First.
Okay. So February 22nd, he was arrested for abducting Danielle due to one tiny spot of blood that had been found inside his motorhome. And another had been found on the jacket that he had dry cleaned.
Okay.
Yes. DNA testing revealed that the blood was a match for Danielle's. So 5 days. Okay, this must have. No.
How sad.
February 1st.
Your neighbor. It's usually who it is.
Okay. Well, on February 27th, a group of volunteers are out searching this. Dehesi, California. That's mm-hmm. an area of California. Mm-hmm. And they find Danielle's remains. Oh, trigger. This is the trigger. Her remains are found lying just off of the trail. She had been stripped naked, and exposure to the elements had caused the decomposition process to accelerate. The medical examiner / autopsist... said that animals had gotten to her body so bad that many of her remains were missing and her skin was mummified.
Oh, my goodness.
Her death was concluded to be a homicide, but because of the degree of decomposition, dental records had to be used to identify her. Blunt force trauma, strangulation, stabbing, and gunshot wounds were all ruled out as the cause of death. Therefore, no cause of death could be identified. It's possible she was suffocated. We don't know. They could not confirm whether she had been sex assaulted or not prior to the murder because her genital organs were missing.
My goodness.
And I think that's all the animals. Yes. The medical examiner stated that Danielle had been deceased for at least 10 days prior to her being found.
So he spent some time with her then.
Yes, because how if it quickly- all happened February 1st and then we're on the 27th, like he...
And then 10 days before that, so he kept her for two
I
weeks?
Guess. That's kind of what I was wondering, too. But he,
But he was questioned.
But then they said that it could have happened the night. She could have been killed the night she disappeared.
Yeah.
And then they just had found her later, and then it took them a while to get the DNA and the results, and then that's why the arrest was, like, a little bit later. The location of Danielle's remains further implicated David Westerfield because they knew that that's where he had been. He'd taken that route on his trip with his motorhome and all this stuff on his little drive to the desert.
So he put his own self there, too.
Yes, he did. So despite evidence against him, David decided to plead not guilty. So, we go all the way to June.
Very little evidence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's like...
I guess blood, but it's little.
Yeah, it is.
Trace.
So, in June 2002 is when his trial happens, and his defense attorney attempts to have his police statement excluded from the trial, alleging that the interrogation process had been unfair. And during the interrogation, that David had been questioned for almost 10 hours.
Oh, wow.
And that detectives ignored all of his requests for a lawyer, his requests for food, and his requests for sleep.
I can look at that as two ways. Because they are so desperate to get answers. So they know if they put him under stress, maybe he will confess. But
I don't understand why people just sit there and go through those interrogations. You do not have to do that.
But he asked for a lawyer and they denied it. So what I'm saying is I see the desperation, but then that can always come back and
listen, the mess rule is up. If they don't let you have a you let them read, like, shoot, I peeled your damn nail off. Mm-hmm. You let them read you your rights and you leave. You do not have to stay.
Gosh.
You leave. Even if your lawyer is there, if your lawyer needs, like, this is part of going back to the Rust trial. Sorry, let me interject my own story here. The officer is asking her all these questions, and she's talking. Like, she's talking. Her lawyer's sitting right there and is, like, twiddling his thumbs, like, lawyer, speak up. Tell her to shut the fuck up and get, and y'all leave.
Yeah.
Because all this is coming into the trial, which it is, now. And it's being used against her. Gosh. And she sounds like an idiot, and she sounds like she has no care in the world for anything that's just happened. So the moral of the story is,
shut
don't
up.
Talk to the police. They're going to pretend to be your friend. They're going to try to relate to you, and they're going to try to get you to say all kinds of stuff, and you're going to be, like, all amped up like I am right now, and you're going to keep talking and talking and talking.
Yeah. You'd be the one.
Listen. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, the police statements... So this resulted in the two detectives who had interrogated him to not be able... being able to testify at the trial. I don't know. But the police statements remained included. So the police statements were able to come into the trial. During the trial, the prosecution presented a ton of forensic evidence. They included the spots of Danielle's blood that had been found on the floor of David's home and on one of his jackets, which is what he turned into the... So, I mean, that's pretty...
So, luckily... So were these dry cleaners DTF, like Missy Beaver's dry cleaner people?
I wonder if, like they had already known, like...
Or did they intercept it that quick?
I don't know.
Yeah, because how did they... They had to have called.
They had to have.
Yeah.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Blair.
And I'm Brittany.
And we're the host of...
By the Cover Podcast.
We cover everything from mysteries, thrillers, romance, chick lit, and even some smut.
Don't forget the smut.
Yeah.
We're so excited to get this thing going and share this with you guys. We've been talking about this for months, and it's finally, finally happening.
Yes.
Special shout out to Rogue Media for helping us with this.
For sure. You can find us on Instagram at @ByTheCover_podcast.
You can also find us on Facebook and TikTok, so don't forget to give us a follow on those two also.
We are so excited to dive into some of our favorite books and share those with you.
We can't wait. Hope you love it.
Hi, and welcome to Bustles and Bangers with your hostess, Rachel and Christopher.
I love it when you say my name.
And you didn't say hi.
I didn't. You just kept going. I'm going to introduce the book. I'm not reading it.
It's
because I don't like reading.
Girls like cowboy butts, you know, and those jeans don't hide anything. Find us on Instagram at Bustles and Bangers or on RogueMediaNetwork.com.
Forensic testing had also found strands of hair that were believed to be Danielle's on David's bed sheets, several of her fingerprints inside David's motorhome, and several pieces of dog hair on the comforter of his bed, which were a match to Danielle's pet dog.
No.
Yes.
That's way too much evidence. He going down.
So, the prosecution provided a theory that David might have gotten into the Van Damme's residence through the garage side door, which Brenda had noticed was unlocked when she got home with her girlfriends, right? But the attorney, despite this theory, whose attorney is this? Jeff Dusick. Why do I always get the worst names? He presented one thing to the jury that the prosecution did not need to prove how David got into the house to kidnap Danielle. They only needed to prove that he kidnapped her, and forensic evidence suggested that he did. So he's.
Yeah. So who gives a shit how?
Right.
When you create a story, people can visualize it even better. And I think that helps convict them. But what about the back door? Are you going to tell us that?
No.
Remember, there's the side door.
Yeah, there was the side door and there was the back door. So I think he must have come in that side door and he left at the back door. He must have been.
I feel like he was in there the whole time they were partying.
Yeah, I think he was.
He's up there scared. And the daughter was probably just like praying for, Mom, come up here, please. Dad, come up here, something.
I mean, because like he did this whole thing while there are people in the house. Like, that's the scariest part of it is like whenever the whole family, like, At least for sure, Dad and the two boys were home. Whether Mom was home or not, or friends were home or not.
She caught him. Like, she caught him she interrupted him in the act. I think he left before he knew they were leaving. That's why he was there. This is planned. Mm-hmm. He was there talking to them, hanging out with them to see how long they're going to be at the bar. He knew Daddy was going to be at home, passed out, and he knew she was going to be drunk.
Yep.
So he was like, this is my opportunity. Let me go before she gets back. She's going to go back and pass out. There, I'll be gone. This is just my own thinking. But she left before he can get out. She left the bar before she can get out of the house. He can get out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard her come in. So he had to wait up there while they were drinking and like that. All they had to do is go upstairs or go check her room.
I can't. So, yeah, I think
that sounds exactly right.
Because he never tells. He never says anything of what he, like, anything. So we don't actually know.
They went out the back door, yeah.
Yeah.
When he left.
So his defense attorneys were like, oh, our law enforcement pressured they felt pressure to solve the case, so they're like putting this on him and blah, 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 and they don't even have any other suspect. You know, they're just doing the normal defense stuff. But apparently David was also facing charges for pornographic material on his computer. Little CP.
Before this?
It just says, yeah.
Or
yes,
they had found this during the investigation.
Yes, they found it. Yeah, I think, Gosh. Yeah. So he wasn't like convicted of anything, but.
Yeah.
And his lawyers then, after they find this porn on his computer, they're like, oh, well, you know what? Actually, that didn't belong to David. That porn was his son's.
Oh, you're throwing his son under the bus.
18-year-old Neil, throwing him straight under the bus, running over him. Literally what I said. Just going to throw him under the bus like that. So Neil, who is now being partially blamed for his own father's crimes, is having to testify at the trial, and is like, I don't know anything about this shit. No. I have no knowledge of this material. And how shady is that?
Yeah.
Like, he must hate that kid. So
he's just saving himself.
Oh. So they keep arguing. They're like, oh, other people could have done it. There are so many people who had been in that house that night. And, you know, look, Brenda and Damon were also, like, allegedly known to have a open marriage. So basically, like, they're swingers.
They're pointing fingers at the parents.
Yes. They're like, they had a non-monogamous marriage where they would have sexual encounters with other couples. And they smoked
That's
marijuana.
Probably what they were doing downstairs.
I know. So I think they were all, like, having, like, a little orgy. And then, it's that the worst? Like, they're
and
like,
you wake up the next morning and you realize.
And you're like, first of all, you're hungover as hell because you stayed up all night having orgies and smoking weed and drinking.
Oh, my God. The worst.
Especially, like, every weekend for me. Just kidding. I don't have orgies every weekend.
So, a lot of times, pedophiles will take a kid thinking the kid is in a bad situation in their mind, right? They're really pedophiles, but did he think he was saving her from them? Like, especially if he thought they were doing this lifestyle and mom was at the bar, you know, getting plastered. Mm-mm. Did he think she's better off with me? Like, that's
well,
the excuse
in his
for doing
mind,
that.
Yeah, I'm sure in his mind he justified it. However these child rapists, weird, nasty people are. Demons. But because of Brenda and Damon's alleged swinging, the defense proposed the theory that, you know, more people were in this house, which I already said that. So, they're like, there could be unidentified people, like, we don't know about, that they could have done it. They're just trying to throw everything out there. But the evidence was too strong. Well, at least, I mean, they had blood, they had the hair, they had all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was enough to prove that, she had been in his trailer shortly before her death. So the defense was saying that there's no forensic evidence that David himself had been inside the house to abduct her, but they're like, well, you don't really have to have that, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the prosecutor, Dusak, he basically was like, it's completely possible for somebody to avoid leaving forensic evidence. You can have gloves. You can do this. You can be very cautious, but especially him, who's very clean in particular, which I'm surprised he had so many little mess ups or.
But imagine. Oh, no.
But I'm wondering how.
Why was there blood?
Exactly. Yes. I was just going to say that. I'm wondering now, like, how did you kill her if, and there's blood, but I mean, if you didn't, I don't know. We don't know how
she died. Yeah, but no, I think he did a great job cleaning, because any just normal cleaner, there probably would have been a lot more evidence. You had a speck,
yes, because
and a speck on your jacket, and what, a dog hair?
Yeah,
that's pretty legit cleaning.
That is pretty good. They said, but meanwhile, Danielle had likely been frightened and struggled inside David's motorhome, causing trace evidence to be left behind. So at least she was, like, fighting. Maybe this is all just based on their, this is just kind of the prosecution's story, because they don't have a story. There was really no explanation. And on September 16th, 2002, the jury reached their decision. David Westerfield was found guilty, and he was to be sentenced to death. However, California has got rid of the death penalty, so it's just kind of like he's not...
just sitting there?
He's currently being held at San Quentin State Prison, but is unknown whether his execution will ever go ahead.
Wow.
So he's in jail, prison for the rest of his life. First degree murder, he's been convicted of. Kidnapping and first degree murder.
That's not how I pictured him.
And he's there in San Quentin State Prison.
He kind of looks like BTK.
Oh, he has those eyebrows that do that weird.
Oh, that's devastating.
I know.
Okay, here's a hard question. The parents don't know what their child went through. They know she was probably sexually assaulted and killed, but they don't know how. They don't know how long they were with them, or she was with the man. Do you think that is better not knowing, or do you think it's better to know?
I think everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if I have to put myself in it to know if I would want to know.
I know.
Because it's like you want to know, but then you don't need to know. You want to know, you don't need to know.
Yeah.
I think as long as they've found the body, at least they have the body to bury, like, whereas a lot of other people who lose their kids maybe don't have that.
Uh-huh.
Do you really need to know?
I don't know. On the other hand, because I'm sitting here thinking about it, I don't know.
Of the other stories that are happening right now, it's like they want to know every single detail.
I feel like my brain will take me to horrible places. And if I know, then at least, like, okay, this is what I know, this is what happened, and I'll learn to accept that. But if I don't ever know, then I'm going to go, he burned her with cigarettes this day, and then he slit her with, you know what I mean, was slicing her up on this day. Then he raped her four times a day, and then he sliced her, you know what I mean? Like, my brain would take me all sorts of torture places that I think it would be better for me to know.
So, like...
so that I can, like...
I know.
Have peace, like, okay, rest, and then get over that. Picture it, visualize it, and be done with it.
That's one thing, like, okay, I know this is obviously two totally different things, but, like, if a husband cheated on the wife and then is like, oh, I cheated, but does the wife want to know everything that
usually, I mean, never. Yeah, I feel like, yeah.
Because I don't think I could ever recover from that, and I couldn't be, like, be with you after I know in my head mentally what you've done, and I'm picturing it over and over, uh-huh. and I would never stop thinking about it. So I would think that would be the same way if you uh-huh. knew your daughter, like you would picture her being raped over and over. Like, in, I don't know. Otherwise, if you don't know, you at least block it out a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's why I said it's a hard way question. Wrong.
Yeah. Neither. It's
you guys tell us, do y'all feel like the Van Damme family is saved because they don't know the details, or do you feel like,
but then again, look at the Idaho, like the Goncalves, yeah, mm-hmm. they want to know every single thing that's mm-hmm. happened to Kaylee. They want to know how she was found. They want to know what, everything. Did she fight back? What were her, like, I kind of think I would, I don't know. I don't even know. You know what? I don't know.
It's hard. Hardest question of the day.
Wow,
that was really depressing.
I know. So you're welcome.
Yeah, it's not a good way to bring in the leap year.
Oh, well, good thing by the time you hear this, it'll be already leapt.
Already.
We'll be getting ready for St. Patty's.
Yay.
So maybe we should do like an Ireland story or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can find one.
I'm going to do a leprechaun murder, so I'm going to do.
Let's do it. Find one.
Okay.
Okay, that was so good. So good. It was so sad.
Stupid people.
It's so sad because, you know, there's judgmental people out there. And so, yeah, the mom was partying and I don't know what they do in their spare time, but you don't deserve that to be drugged.
Yeah, you'd be smoking weed. Oh, hell no.
When you're in the spotlight, every bad mm-hmm. thing that you do, even though the people are talking about it, probably do the same thing or worse.
Oh, like when I'm watching these trials and I'm seeing all these text messages, like, because it's like you get your whole everything's blown up.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, could you imagine the whole live broadcast your text messages?
No. Nope. Okay, y'all, that is it.
That is it. You are welcome.
We'll see y'all next time on a brand new episode.
Get ready.
Of Bloody Happy Hour. Don't forget to
stay aware,
stay alive,
and always be DTF.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.